Coming up this week on the Vacation Land Theme Park Podcast, it's a very special episode, and we're sitting down and talking the history of a Disneyland holiday fan favorite. Plus, a little bit later on, we have an exciting announcement about what's next for the Vacation Land Theme Park Podcast. So, it's time for our holiday tale to begin. There's no turning back now. Please, come all the way in. This is the Vacation Land Theme Park Podcast. This is the Vacation Land Theme Park Podcast for the week of December 5th, 2018. Visit our travel partner, Magical Vacation Planner Vicarious, for help planning your next vacation getaway to any of the following: Walt Disney World, Disneyland, Disney Cruise Line, Adventures by Disney and Alani, Universal Studios Orlando, and Royal Caribbean, Princess, Carnival Cruises, and more. Get your free consultation by visiting Magical Vacation Planner by Caris on Facebook or by visiting magicalvacationplanner.com/staff/Caris, C-A-R-I-S-S dash M-I-L-A-N-O. Well, welcome everyone. As you may have realized in our last show, or as you may have heard in our last show, I'm on vacation. Right now I'm out in Disney World. So rather than doing a typical news and segment show like we do, I thought it might be fun to invite a friend of mine in, who you have heard on the podcast before, and we're gonna talk a little Disneyland history today. And at the very end of the podcast, we are going to have a very special announcement about the future of the Vacation Land Theme Park Podcast and kind of what's going to come up next for us in 2019. This is, of course, we are a theme park podcast dedicated to all things theme park from around Southern California. But today we're just going to be focusing on Disneyland, and we're going to be focusing on one very specific element of Disneyland that has been a fan favorite for over 50 years. I'd like to welcome a good friend of mine, owner of Dr. Skippers on Etsy, and the author of Skipper Stories, and of course, our resident historian, David, Dr. Skipper Marley. Welcome back, David.
Thank you for having me.
How's it going?
It's going great. It's going to be here.
Yeah, so we're in the mix of the holiday season, and we are, Christmas is coming, Thanksgiving has come and gone. Hopefully everyone is enjoying themselves on this holiday season. We're going to have one more episode before the end of the year and before we go on break for the holiday season, and we'll be back in 2019. So for this episode, I wanted to bring David in, and we're going to talk about a couple of things here, all related to one fan favorite attraction. As you know, every year the Haunted Mansion in New Orleans Square, and not just here at Disneyland, all over the world, Tokyo has a version of it too, but the Haunted Mansion undergoes a seasonal transformation and becomes the Haunted Mansion Holiday, which is an overlay done with the characters from The Nightmare Before Christmas. So we're going to talk about a couple of things here. We're going to talk about both the history of The Nightmare Before Christmas overlay at Disneyland specifically. And I think more importantly than that, we need to understand how that it affects the traditional version. We need to understand how the history of the traditional version came to be. So I think to get a better appreciation of the Haunted Mansion holiday overlay, I've asked David to come in, and he's going to talk a little bit about the history of the Haunted Mansion. He's going to talk about some of the things that went into its creation. And David, take it away. Let's start from the beginning. Where did the
Do you like how I seized the topic?
I appreciate how you ran with that and made it your
Thank
own.
Thank you. I did reading and research them, and it came time to do something. I just sat there like a lump.
And by the way, just going to kind of mention, you are a professor of history at Cal State Fullerton, aren't you?
I do teach at Cal State Fullerton. Occasionally, I'm there teaching.
So this is an authoritative source. But let's start from the beginning. Let's talk about how the Haunted Mansion came to be and some of the things that went into that.
There was always, even from the earliest plans at Disneyland, there was going to be a Haunted Mansion in it. And at one point, it was going to be right at the end of Main Street. So there'd be the castle at the very end, and then off to the side, there was going to be a Haunted Mansion. So it moved around from time to time, but it's something Walt always wanted to do. They just didn't have time to do it when they were building the park originally.
What was it about having a Haunted Mansion that Walt really enjoyed?
I think he just liked ghost stories, and that kind of guided them, because but he kept it very vague in a very Walt kind of way what he wanted. So he wanted to go a spooky house, and first, like Pirates of the Caribbean, it was going to be a walkthrough kind of attraction, and but it was something he always wanted. Yeah, and go ahead.
Oh no, have you? So you've seen the Disneyland Tencennial, obviously, where he talks about the history of that. So
yeah,
walk us through that. Walk us through a little bit about how, because the Haunted Mansion went through several changes and several iterations, and there was a lot of conflicting personalities that were involved in the Haunted Mansion. So what can you tell us about the Haunted Mansion's overall development from the early days to what it ended up now?
Yeah. Well, the big debate was on how scary and spooky it was going to be. And so there was a big variation on, do you make it dark? Is it going to be like bloody and dangerous? Is it going to be super fun and kind of kooky and silly? And I was just reading, there's a fantastic book. The best book on this is called The Unauthorized Story of Walt Disney's Haunted Mansion by Jeff Bonham. It's on Bahum. It's on from Theme Park Press. You can get it on Amazon or whatever. But Raleigh Crump did the foreword, and Guillermo del Toro, who's doing the new Haunted Mansion movie.
Supposedly.
If it ever happens.
If it ever happens. Yeah.
If it ever happens. Could it be better than the Eddie Murphy movie? I don't know. I don't know if you could ever do that. Sorry, we can edit that part out. That was inappropriate Eddie Murphy commenting. But it was really changed from person to person and idea to idea. And like at one point they were watching some 1950s Japanese horror movies and thought, we can add some of these elements. And they were just like creepy and bloody and violent and thought, no, that's a bit, can't have blood oozing out of eye sockets. So let's not do that. But
they saved that later on for extraterrestrial encounter in Magic Kingdom, the sort of bloody, creepy.
I have not been on that.
You should look up the history of that. It's
all right.
Yeah. Yeah. But go on. We're talking about Haunted Mansion. Okay.
And so, like, they were pitching ideas to Walt of what they wanted to do with it. And I don't know if you know the famous story about Raleigh Crump was designing weird things, just kind of funky pictures.
Right. It was going to be his Museum of the Weird, right?
Yeah. But these were things he thought could be in the Haunted Mansion. And the Imagineers stuck his stuff in a corner and said, all right, this is the main presentation. Yours is in the corner. And Walt didn't see it till he turned to leave after the presentation and said, well, what is all this stuff? And so Raleigh showed it to him, and after Walt left, the Imagineer said, see, we told you that stuff's no good. And the next morning, Raleigh got to work, and Walt was sitting at his desk, and which, of course, would make him a little bit nervous. And according to Raleigh, Walt said, you son of a bitch, I was thinking about those scary things you made all night long. Because it was stuff like a candle, like a man made out of burning candles. So, but like all kinds of creepy, fun, cool things. And
yeah, Raleigh Crump is he's still alive, and he is. So he's responsible for a lot of the. His big thing, I think, was a lot of kinetic stuff. He liked to design a lot. So if you know anything about the history of Small World, he designed the original Tower of the Four Winds, and he designed all of the moving pieces that are on the facade of the that were on the facade of the 1964 World's Fair version of Small World, and also currently on the facade of the Disneyland Small World building in Anaheim. So, but yeah, he's an interesting character. He was one that always had a little bit of a bend towards the darker, more a little creepier side of things.
And he also did the Tiki Gods at the Enchanted Tiki Room and a bunch of other cool stuff. And so there was just that kind of debate on how scary is it going to be, how spooky is it going to be. It was going to be a walkthrough at one point.
All right. So Raleigh Crump obviously had the weird aspect of it taken down, and I think it's funny to watch that that episode of the Tencennial episode where Walt talks about, you know, all the things, because he's previewing and it's very funny to watch Walt talk about the things that are coming, because I heard the story that Walt always liked to use the phrase and things. So if you watch him, you know, he's talking about, oh, we're going to have these ghosts and things and these sort of these weird things. And he talked in very general terms. And so when did actual work on the mansion itself, when did they actually start working on it? Because obviously Walt was alive. He died in 1966. When did the work really begin in earnest on the Haunted Mansion?
It actually went in two phases. The one thing I like about that Tencennial episode, now that I think about it, is you see how the walkthrough for Pirates of the Caribbean is done. Like, they're ready to go, and it's designed and built, and the Haunted Mansion is still this kind of vague idea. what happened with the Haunted Mansion is they had built the structure. They based it on a house from Maryland, but they built the Haunted Mansion and then stopped, kind of like with the Pirates of the Caribbean, they stopped construction on it. Like, they built the Haunted Mansion building, and it sat there for years with a fence around it and a sign that this was coming soon. And they, kind of like Pirates of the Caribbean, they worked on it for a few years, and then it stopped because of the World's Fair, 1964 World's Fair.
Right, because Pirates of the Caribbean at this point is, at this point it's done. The point of the 10th annual episode, like, it's complete, but it was supposed to be a walk the wall. And the 10th annual episode, he already talks about it being a boat attraction, because he asks Julie Reams, like, you know, about the waterfall. He tells you, you know, you come up the waterfall. But Pirates of the Caribbean, much like Haunted Mansion, was originally designed as a walkthrough attraction.
And the World's Fair changed all of that. They were able to learn a lot of new technology and use, like, have that kind of Omnimover stuff for the attraction, which changed it completely and I think made it amazing and fantastic. So the structure itself sat there for years before they decided what to do with it and how they were going to design it. And once they realized it was going to be a ride, an attraction that you're going to have to sit in these dune buggies and ride around, they needed a much bigger place for it. And that's where you get things like the stretching room. If you've been to the one in Florida, they have a stretching room, but it doesn't, you're not going anywhere. It's not an elevator where, spoiler alert. But the one in California is an elevator that takes you down to a lower level so you can go underneath the train tracks, because they realize they need a show building on the other side of the railroad tracks. Just like the waterfall in Pirates of the Caribbean. The whole goal is to get you out and somewhere else.
Right. So in the Haunted Mansion, and I've spent some time working with on the Haunted Mansion in the past. And so the my favorite aspect of it is that there's two stretching rooms. There's one on the left and one on the right. And so you take the Haunted Mansion, when it's stretching, when the portraits are stretching, you're actually going down. And then the hallway where the changing portraits are, which I believe was a holdover from Raleigh Crumb's Museum of the Weird, right? The changing portraits?
Yes. And when you leave at the very end, when you go up the ramp with the hurry back, that lady, that's another part of this. They thought maybe they could put it there, the Museum of the Weird. Yeah.
Awesome. So, yeah. So but when you're going down that portrait hallway, the changing portraits, which they changed in the last, I'm going to say, like 5 or 6 years, that changed. Before, they just used to morph, and now they change with the flashing of the lightning in the windows, which, from what I understand, was the way that it was always meant to be. It was always supposed to change, like when the lightning flashed, you know, the photo changes, so it's instead of it's Medusa, it's the you know, then she's got the snakes, and instead of the ship, then it's, you know, the shipwreck, the ghost ship. So, but from what I understand, that was always the way that it was supposed to be. But so there were rumors swirling around for years, and this, we're talking about 1964 when they began construction on it, and Haunted Mansion didn't open up until
67 or 68.
Yeah, 60. I believe it's 68.
I should probably know that.
Right, because it's a history podcast.
Yeah.
There were many. I mean, we're talking, it opened up, you know, at least a good couple of years after Walt's death. And, you know, there were lots of rumors swirling around, you know, that it was really haunted, and that, the haunting prevented them from working on it, all kinds of different crazy rumors. But really, as they were developing that new Omnimover system, and they were completely changing out the inner workings of what that attraction was supposed to be. What can you tell us about the history, I mean, of the area that it's in? What do you know about the development of New Orleans Square?
It was the summer of 69 when the mansion opened. We can go back and edit that later, so it sounds like we know what we're doing.
Excellent.
Sounds good. Excuse me. Well, Walt, they were there for the opening of New Orleans Square. Walt was there for that. They had the Columbia dressed as a pirate ship come around the corner. If you've seen that video, it's great. And so it was already built and designed. So again, like years before. So for Pirates of the Caribbean, New Orleans Square was there, and he wanted it to look nice and shiny and clean, not like the real New Orleans. And so it sat there for a long time, that house, nice and shiny and pretty. But fenced off.
Right. They had spent years excavating that entire corner of the park for
And one of the reasons I think people might have thought it was haunted was they put out advertisements looking for post-lifetime leases for ghosts. And Walt actually was on a radio show in London where he talked about we're opening a spook house or a haunted mansion, and he invited ghosts from around the world to come apply to work there. And so he kind of did it as a joke, and then the Imagineers ran with it. So it might have been part of it. But I don't know, if you know somebody who works at the Haunted Mansion, they all talk about how they're convinced it's haunted, or there's different places that are haunted. And
there are different stories about the actual residents of the Haunted Mansion. I know several people that have worked on that attraction. I spent some time on that attraction myself, and there's a vibe. You know, there's definitely a vibe there. There's the story of the little boy with the red hat at the end of the attraction. You know, when the cast members are walking on the treadmill at the end.
I heard that one is people are convinced that's the most haunted spot.
Yeah, that is the most haunted spot. There's supposedly a little boy with the red hat that you can, because there's a mirror as you're walking on the treadmill. There's a mirror that you're staring into to see behind you, see if anybody's coming down the wrong way off of the ramp. And so, you know, supposedly there's a boy with the red hat. You know, there are stories of pictures appearing in the ballroom scene, and you know, having writing. One of my favorites was that somebody placed a picture of a loved one that, you know, they always wanted to go to Disneyland, and supposedly, you know, years later, handwriting appeared on the back of the picture, and nobody had gone in there because nobody goes into the ballroom scene. And
I've been in the ballroom scene. You've been in the ballroom scene?
I've been in the ballroom scene.
Everyone's been in the ballroom scene.
Yeah. But so that's right. So you're talking about, we're talking about how, so now we've covered the spooky aspect of it,
yeah.
Right? So all of the Raleigh Crump Museum of the Weird stuff, as well, I'd put it. How did we get to where we are? Because who became involved after the Raleigh Crump spooky stuff? Because I understand that there was kind of a little bit of tension between Raleigh Crump and the people that became involved in it, who wanted it to be more of a silly aspect.
Yeah. Jeff Bonham talks about this in his book. He has a great chapter called Too Many Cooks. And it really got to be Walt liked to put people together that would kind of maybe sometimes conflict, because he thought good work would come out of that. Or if there was a team that worked really well together, he would occasionally break them up and have them work with different people to get kind of a different vibe. So he put Mark Davis to work on that, and a guy named Claude Coates, a great Imagineer, put them together, even though they had very different working styles. Claude was a background scenic artist for Sleeping Beauty and whatnot, and he helped create Mr. Toad's Wild Ride and things like that. And he's responsible for a lot of the look of like Pirates of the Caribbean. So he did like these big, deep, like intense kind of like theme and mood, and it would tell a story. And Mark Davis was more about a bit you could look at. Like a famous Jungle Cruise thing is he did the rhino.
Yeah.
Chasing the guys at the pole. You look at it, you got it. He invented the hitchhiking ghosts.
Walt used to refer to him as his gag man. He was Walt's gag man.
Yeah. The great thing about Mark Davis is you could look at a scene of his and there's no story to it. It's just a bit. It's just one quick little thing, which is fantastic. And a matter of fact, I got to see one of his things an unused gig of this history group that I belong to for Disney historians. They had an original Mark Davis drawing for the Pirates of the Caribbean, but there was to be a scene where there were these five pirates around a table looking at a map. And as your boat comes by, they're having a secret meeting, and they each in turn look at you out of the boat. Like they all like notice that you're there and that you see them. And that's part of the curse.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So they showed the drawing of it, and it's so creepy looking, and that classic Mark Davis writing. And the map would be light up, and each face would light up as it turned and saw you, and they weren't thrilled you were there. Oh, I wish that would go in. But then people would complain if you made any change ever to anything.
You can't, yeah.
At Disneyland.
And that's funny, because this, along with Pirates of the Caribbean, obviously are the two last attractions that Walt worked on before he passed away. I think if they had been designed originally as envisioned with the walkthrough and the, you know, the Pirates of the Caribbean was supposed to be the wax museum. And,
yeah,
you know, I don't think that this, I mean, it's a very 60s concept when you think about it,
yeah.
You know, all these, the way that these were originally supposed to be envisioned. What do you think keeps this attraction so, Well, let's go back to that. Let's talk about what Mark Davis and Claude Coates' contributions on what they contributed to the Haunted Mansion.
All right. So Mark did a lot of the gags, a lot of the one scene bits. So he did the hitchhiking ghosts. He did a lot of that kind of. He helped with the stretching room. Raleigh Crump had done some stuff for the stretching room, and Mark didn't like it, so he repainted all those sets. So he did a lot of those kinds of bits, and then Claude Coates was the one that came up with like the overall theme and idea of it. One fun thing I like about the attraction is the raven that's there in all the scenes. That was originally going to be a narrator. That as you went
right, and so sort of the unofficial canon is that every time you hear the great work by Paul Frees, is one of my favorite voiceover artists of all time.
When hinges creak in doorless chambers, and strange and frightening sounds echo through the halls, whenever candlelights flicker where the air is deathly still, that is the time when ghosts are present, practicing their terror with ghoulish delight.
Opening paragraph, it sounds a little rushed, and he's got plenty of time.
It seemed rushed to me. Yeah, I think you can play with that a little bit more, Paul.
How much time more do I have?
Oh, you got another 5 seconds, 8 seconds.
I remember, up until a year or so ago, he was also the voice of the auctioneer in the Pirates of the Caribbean. Yep. And
weigh anchor now, you swabbies. What be I offered for this winsome wench? Stout-hearted and corn
fitchy. Hey, be a stouter by the pound.
Shift your cargo, dearie. Show 'em your larboard side.
We watch the redhead.
Belay there, you forecastle swab.
Boy, the redhead.
And now, you bilge rats, do I hear six? Who makes it six?
Six should be. Six bottles of rum.
I'm not sponging for rum. It be gold I'm after. Strike your colors, you brazen wench. No need to expose your superstructure.
And he's the voice of the ghost host in Disneyland and the Haunted Mansion. And him and Thurl Ravenscroft, who was the voice of the Disneyland Railroad and Tony the Tiger for many, many years, were two of the most prolific voice artists at Disneyland. Paul Frees also did the voice of Ludwig von Drake. The Math of Magic Land. So, the sort of non-canon explanation is that the ghost host is the raven, and every time the ghost host's voice pops up, the raven is in the scene with you. So the ghost host pops up at the end.
Yeah.
You know, and the raven is on top of the graveyard. The ghost host's voice, ghost host's voice pops up in the ballroom. The raven's in the ballroom.
Madame Leota?
Yeah, Madame Leota, who was, do you know who Madame Leota was?
After Leota Toombs.
Yeah, who is the mom of Kim Irvine, who is what we're going to talk about a little bit later. Kim Irvine is a current executive in Imagineering, and she actually played some sort of a little bit of role in the Haunted Mansion Holiday later on. But and there was Eleanor Audley, who was the actual voice of Eleanor Audley is also very famous in Disney. She's a lot of the Disney. She's Maleficent.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, she's the evil stepmother. So she's the one that who did the voice of Madame Leota.
Great voice.
Quite a glittering assemblage, King Stefan. Royalty, nobility, the gentry, and... Oh, how quaint, even the rabble. Serpents and spiders, tail of a rat, call in the spirits wherever they're at. Rap on a table. It's time to respond. Send us a message from somewhere beyond.
But so anything else on what else can we talk about here? Talk about the just anything else in the history. So obviously, the Haunted Mansion opens, and you know, it's been a fan favorite. One of my favorite stories is the Mark Davis artwork is like he was able to make this mansion look, you know, if you look at that original concept art, you know, it's a very famous mm-hmm. concept art. He was able to make the mansion look dilapidated without it looking neglected without making it look dilapidated.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was all about the landscaping and all about, you know, that making it, giving it that feel without making it look like it was neglected or without making it look like it was dirty and dilapidated. Yeah. So, but great stuff. Anything else? Any fun stories coming out of the book or that you know of about the Haunted Mansion that you want to share with us?
One interesting story. I interviewed a guy for my Skipper Stories book, and he got hired at Disneyland. He wanted to work at the Haunted Mansion. That was his goal. And they sent him to Jungle Cruise, and he wasn't happy. But he spent 3 years at the park trying to get to Haunted Mansion before he finally got trained there. I'm like, great, what was it like? He said, I hated it. Because I worked there for a week and said, I do not ever want to work Haunted Mansion again. I said, why? He goes, you're inside all day, and it's dark, and you just walk for miles on those stupid treadmills. And it was, I just thought that was hysterical that he goes, I'd walk by, and I'd like, oh, I want to get trained so bad. And he finally did and hated it.
Yeah, I had a lot of friends over there, friends who worked there. So things that you may not know about the Haunted Mansion that, you know, as you go around in the queue, there's a side entrance in the back. And as you go in that back door, you go to your right, and there's a cast member break room. So again, if you're in the extended queue of the Haunted Mansion out by the graveyard, there's a hall, there's a walkway. You'll see cast members coming in and out of, or going in and out of sometimes. And if you go, there's a door, and if you go in that door, you turn to your right. That's where the cast member break area is. There is a staircase leads down, and that is where the actual, not the control, there's no control, but it's where the show monitoring system is. And that room is super cool because that room is straight out of like 1967. It's exactly what it looked like when it first opened. There's this green metal consoles with black and white screens, and you can, you know, talk over the PA systems. But that room is actually where the doom buggies turn around. So if you were to ride a doom buggy from the end back around to the front area, you would actually go through the console area. We used to know a guy that he was an older gentleman that worked on the Haunted Mansion, and he actually got caught trying to, like, standing too close to the doom buggies one time, and his pants got caught in the track, and started to pull him a little bit. But he was an older guy, and he just kind of looked at us and said, "Don't hit the ride stop. I'm okay. I'm just a little stuck." So you know that when I was there, they still had a lot of the original sound equipment and things underneath, and the underneath storage areas where they actually creepily were storing some of the old animatronics for the Country Bear Jamboree after they took it out in 2001.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so like the three little the sun bonnets, the three, you know, Bunny, uh-huh. Bubbles, and Beulah were down there, and you would walk down there and just be face to face with these creepy, you know, animatronic.
Oh, that is interesting.
Bears. Yeah, so they use it for storage a lot. They used it for
I have one other good random story for
you.
Yeah,
go for it.
A guy, another Jungle Cruise skipper I interviewed, a different guy, decided to see if they could hang on during the stretching room. You know, there's the little like gargoyles that come out in the stretching room. He jumped up and hung on to one as the elevator went down, and hung up there the whole time. And about halfway through, he realized he'd made a pretty serious mistake and wasn't sure he could do it. So as the elevator was coming back, he let go a little bit early and had to roll and hurt his ankle. But he would have been severely injured if he'd fallen.
And I won't name the friend, but one of the favorite things to do was the pants challenge. So you would go down in an empty E, and we call them the ERs, the elevator rooms or extending rooms. That's what they call them, the ER1 and ER2. So the pants challenge was you would go down in an empty ER, you'd take off your pants, you'd run around the room, and then you'd put your pants back on before the door opened at the bottom. We have a friend who did that with someone else in the room. The other person thought it would be really funny to throw their pants, to throw his pants on top of the gargoyles. So he was desperately trying to close the doors before guests saw him in his boxer shorts with his pants hanging at the top of the gargoyles at the top of the room. So some of the there are countless stories of all kinds of things happening on grad nights. Some of the things that were the cast members did and said and saw are not repeatable for a family audience, but I'll let you draw your own conclusions on that. But that's good stuff. So, you know, thanks for sharing the early history of the Haunted Mansion. I'm going to switch gears here a little bit, and I am going to actually talk about what's currently going on, and that's how we're going to tie it into this holiday time. So the Haunted Mansion holiday is a very popular overlay that's been going on for the last few years. It's a seasonal overlay of the Haunted Mansion attraction at Disneyland and Tokyo Disneyland, where it is known as the Haunted Mansion Holiday Nightmare.
Ooh, cool.
Yeah, so which this blends the settings and characters of the original Haunted Mansion with those of Tim Burton's 1993, can you believe it, 1993, wow, film The Nightmare Before Christmas. Taking inspiration from The Night Before Christmas, the attraction retells the story of Jack Skellington, also known as Sandy Claus, visiting the Haunted Mansion on Christmas Eve, leaving holiday chaos in his wake. The Haunted Mansion typically closes for 2.5 weeks in late summer so it can be converted into the Haunted Mansion holiday. The overlaid attraction is then open to guests from late September through early January before being closed again to remove the Christmas, to remove the overlay. Due to the success of It's a Small World and the Country Bear Christmas Special, which I desperately miss, two other Christmas attractions the Imagineers decided to they wanted to install a Christmas overlay at the Haunted Mansion. They initially considered a theme centered around A Christmas Carol, which is a story featuring several ghosts, as they deemed it a natural match for the Haunted Mansion. However, the setting of A Christmas Carol, which is Dickensian London, did not fit well with the attraction's New Orleans Square location. So the decision was made to instead center the overlay around The Nightmare Before Christmas, effectively combining the spookiness of the Haunted Mansion with the Christmas season. And I will ask you, Nightmare Before Christmas. This is the eternal debate. Is Nightmare Before Christmas a Christmas movie or a Halloween movie?
I consider it a Christmas movie.
And that's the correct answer.
Oh, yay for me. I usually get that wrong. Any questions wrong. But I'm generally opposed. I'll go on record as being opposed to old, like, Christmas overlays, holiday overlays. I don't want to see ice crystals hanging off the castle. Just show me the regular castle. I freaking love what they do with Haunted Mansion. So I'm a hypocrite is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, knowing this about David, I was actually kind of I was a little bit scared to ask him to do this episode with me, knowing. And if you go back and you listen to the main podcast, you will see David makes his opinion very clearly known about some of these things.
One more wildly hypocritical thing.
Yes.
Did I hate those overlays? I love what Cars Land does for Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
Freaking love it.
I think that's always
so well done. Other than that, I hate all of it. And it all goes on too long. Starts too early and goes too long.
So going back really quickly before we go on. It does go back. It's like Martin Luther King Day before some of this stuff comes down. I don't disagree with you. But going back to what we originally talked about, and I brought it up earlier, if the attractions had been crafted and designed and opened as originally envisioned, do you think that they would have the longevity that we've seen? Because people, you talk about, you know, people freak out every time that something has changed in any of these classic attractions, and obviously these are the last two that Walt worked on personally, so they hold a special place in people's hearts. But people do lose their damn minds anytime you change the slightest thing. But do you think that they would be around, or do you think that they would have lasted as long? And to that end, do you think if Walt had lived another 10, 15 years, which is not out of the question, he was 66 when he died, do you think that these attractions would still be around?
If Walt had been around, everything would have been radically different. And I think that's kind of the curse of Disneyland, that you can change stuff at Walt Disney World as much as you want, and that's fine. But everything, especially if it's a Walt original, people lose their minds if you change anything. And if Walt had lived another 20 years or more, you wouldn't recognize the park today. It'd be so different because he was always plussing and always changing things. And
I'm a big fan. This is going off on a tangent. Are you familiar with the multiverse theory?
No.
So there's multiple
Rick and Morty's multiverse,
something like that. Like there's so in time and space, there are multiple universes with different outcomes from different situations. Somewhere in the multiverse, there's a world where Walt lived, you know, another 20 years or so.
He was only 66 when he died, which is, frankly, that gets younger every day. But that's pretty young. There's no reason to believe he couldn't have lived another 20 years. And all the great ideas he had. And I knew Ron Miller, his son-in-law, said a couple months before he died, he said he just wants to live another 15 years. He wants to get Epcot going and some of his new ideas. Like, I need 15 years. And but I had another idea about what we were going to talk about with the overlays that I totally forgot. I lost my train of thought completely.
That's all right. But going back to, do you think that these attractions would still be around?
Thank you. I got it. If they were done as originalist walkthroughs, I don't think they would have lasted very long. They would have changed. If you live in the Southern California area, or if you get a chance to visit here and you want to see what Haunted Mansion and what Pirates of the Caribbean would have been like, go to Knott's Berry Farm and go on the Mine Train ride. They've updated it a little bit, and I'm a little disappointed because it came out around the same time as Pirates and Mansion were supposed to come out. But it's a lot of static scenes where you hear voices and there's sounds of guys working, you know, pickaxes and whatnot, but they're not moving or doing anything. And you're in a train, hence the name of the clever name of the title. But that's what that ride would have looked like. So when I taught History of Disneyland, I told my students, go on the Mine Train ride. That would have been what the mansion was like, what Pirates of the Caribbean was like. And it's okay, but it's not great. So I think that original version, Walt would have changed it pretty quickly.
Yeah, and someone that I know went to a panel years ago where Alice Davis, who is the widow of Mark Davis, was there, and the question was posed, what do you think Mark would have thought? Mark Davis was actually radically opposed to any kind of overlay on anything. He always thought that the attraction should be the attraction,
yes,
the story that they crafted. And so they asked Alice Davis, what do you think Mark would have thought of Haunted Mansion Holiday? And everybody's like, I'm sure he's gonna. Yeah, her answer was he would have hated it. He would have absolutely hated everything about it. So yeah. I think that's really interesting. So
I just say one other thing. I got to see from a friend who works at Disney's Animation Research Library. I got to see the original figures they used for The Night Before Christmas, and they're all much bigger than you would think they are. Like Jack Skellington's head is easily the size of a baseball. So, and they're all much taller and bigger than you would. For some reason, I always picture them like the Rankin Bass, Rudolph,
the very tiny,
as being very small, but they're pretty good size.
Yeah. And then there's multiple, I've seen, not in person, but I've seen for every one of Jack's expressions, there's a variation of that expression.
I got to see a box of his skulls, which is disturbing. But yeah, all the different eyebrow raises and whatnot. It's pretty cool.
All right. So Steve Davidson, who is the creative director for Walt Disney Entertainment, took the lead on the Haunted Mansion Holiday project. Initially, the team thought bringing the Nightmare Before Christmas to the Haunted Mansion would prove to be sort of an easy task. However, after working on the project, they realized that this quote-unquote simple task wasn't quite so simple after all. They wanted to create an overlay with Nightmare Before Christmas characters and references everywhere. To them, it seemed like a little bit of a crazy idea. In fact, it was a little too crazy, and it was 3 years working on this idea before they even got the project approved from Imagineering. Paul Frees's voiceover work was replaced in his role as a ghost host by Corey Burton, who had done voiceover work with Disney before. Leota Toombs' daughter and director concept and design at Walt Disney Imagineering, Kim Irvine, resembled her mother and was thus chosen to perform in her place as Madame Leota. And Susan Blakesley, Susan Blakesley was the voiceover artist who was chosen to replace Eleanor Audley as Madame Leota. She does a really good job, in my opinion. They all do. The singing busts were topped with jack-o'-lanterns and given computer-animated singing projections.
Which is cool.
Yeah, new voice actors were also picked for the graveyard ghost, and that sounds similar to the original. The Haunted Mansion Holiday opened on October 3rd, 2001, and I was there for that day.
Really?
I was, and quickly became popular with guests. Yeah, it did. I remember working there and having easily 3 hours. 3 or 4 hour waits.
Wow.
And there's a cast member who is very, very, very popular with guests who he used to do a shtick bit with puppets in the extending room. And his shtick was, you know, it's fine when there's a 20 minute wait, but the line when it opened for Haunted Mansion Holiday went clear down past the sort of what you would the entrance of New Orleans Square. So past the fountain, past the train station, almost to like where the French Market is. And I won't say his name, but there were several people who were not happy with him because he would do his shtick with the puppets in the extending room, and you couldn't. So the way that the extending rooms were is if one is down and you can't bring the other one up until the other one is closed. So you be like, hey, we got to, you know, close the doors and take the elevator down. Enough with the puppets. But, you know, what are you going to do?
Enough with the puppets.
That's
the title of this show.
There you go. On September 13th, 2013, which ironically was Friday the 13th, the Haunted Mansion in Disneyland opened to the public, outfitted with new effects and set pieces in celebration of its 13th year. Upon visiting the mansion, guests first see that the facade has been completely redecorated with jack-o'-lanterns and candles, and Jack's sleigh is on the roof. In the foyer, a rendition of Making Christmas plays with the ghost host. Well, the ghost host begins to tell the story of what is happening at the mansion. And that my favorite line is the way I introduce the episode, because it's a little, I feel like it's a little homage to, you know, it's Nightmare Before Christmas, and it's also, you know, homage to the original Paul Frees recording. A picture of Jack Skellington slowly changes into Jack dressed as Santa Claus. Doors open, letting guests into the famous octagonal portrait gallery. Large stained glass paintings line the walls depicting innocent Christmas scenes. After the doors close shut, all goes dark with the horrendous sound of paintings breaking in half. The room begins to stretch, the tension rises, and with a thunderclap, Jack's face appears in the cupola above, shouting, Happy Holidays, everyone.
I love the stained glass window effect.
Yes, it's brilliant. I didn't get it at first. For the first time I saw it, I was like, I don't get it. And then I was like, oh, it's supposed to be like stained glass, and that's the sound of the windows breaking. The original Jack that hung up there is actually on the wall at the cast member store known as Company D. It's actually just the giant Jack head, so they've really switched it out. Yeah, so the original one is on the wall at Company D, I'm assuming for sale. It does, where they have a lot of the stuff that you can purchase that's been in the park and stuff. So, yeah. And if you're not familiar with where the cupola is, it's where the, of course, there's always My Way. There's this, you know, when the lights go out and everybody screams, where the swinging body is in the above where you're standing in the portrait gallery. Since 2013, the ceiling has been retooled to depict a stained glass wreath, changing color as the room stretches. It will shatter twice, once in the face of a grinning pumpkin head, then entirely to reveal a fully animated Jack Skellington looking down upon guests. When the lights come back on, the ghost host can still be seen in the rafters. A scream and the shattering of glass is heard, and the doors reopen. Guests are led into the loading area, where they board their doom buggy to begin the tour. From above, Jack greets guests with Sally and the vampire Teddy. Down another hallway, paintings of characters from Halloween Town watch guests every move. In the library, Zero has created a spinning Christmas tree of books wrapped in garlands. The staring busts create a spinning... The doom buggies... 3, 2, 1. The doom buggies then float into the music room where Sally sits listening to the vampire. I'm going to cut that part.
We'll fix it in post.
Yep.
Can I count down 3, 2, 1 just to throw you off when you're editing this?
Sure.
Just in the middle of a sentence, I'm just going to stop and count.
Oh, no.
And you'll be like, what the hell did I do that for?
3, 2, 1. Guests float past an endless hallway with bone decor all around. Zero, Jack's dog, floats inside, barking happily. In the conservatory, a group of flowers has sprung to life and now forms the choir. A man tries to escape his Christmas-wrapped coffin, but the vampire Teddy sits atop, hammer and nails in hand.
I love that
one. The hallway, which guests travel through backwards, has been redecorated as well, with skulls and garlands. Doors on either side make strange noises as though something on the other side were trying to get out. A monstrous, man-eating wreath waits above the guests, reaching out to grab them. More of the comically vicious flowers seem to be sprouting from it. The possessed grandfather clock chimes 13 as the hands spin wildly backwards, and a note reads, "To Leota, 13 special gifts for you, Santa Claus." What I didn't mention in this was my favorite part was when it first opened, all of the decorations that were it's all like an advent calendar. It was like an advent calendar. So as you would get closer to Christmas, it would do like the 13 days of Christmas. So all of the little things that you see in the loading area were actually hidden behind presents, and they weren't all out at the same time. So you would go one day or 1 week or 13 weeks of Christmas. So you would go 1 week, and then like a new thing would be open, and then you know you would go another week, and then a new thing would be open. So it's actually more like a advent countdown. Now they're just all open all the time, but I really miss that. I really miss that advent calendar countdown that they used to do there.
That was just kind of, they did it all at once just to piss off APs.
That's what they did. That's exactly.
APs would not stop coming every single week to see one new thing open.
Good luck with that. Right. And then they, never mind. In the seance room, Madame Leota recites the 13 days of Christmas, her 13 Christmas gifts, tarot cards showing all her gifts float about the room, while the vampire teddy bear rings bells maniacally. A zombified nutcracker imitates Leota chanting her incantations. The happy haunts finally begin to materialize in the ballroom. A cake sits on the table that bears resemblance to the spiral hill from Halloween Town, but covered in snow. And now it's the gingerbread house, a giant gingerbread house that they do every year. In the attic, all of Jack's presents have been stored. Ghastly glowing presents lie about the room. Jack-in-the-boxes pop up to scare passing guests. A snake, having eaten some presents, sits with Jack's naughty and niceless hanging out of its mouth. The graveyard has been completely covered in snow, and the spiral hill from Halloween Town sits in the middle of the graveyard, covered with snow and singing glowing jack-o'-lanterns. Jack Skellington greets guests at the gate, wishing them a Merry Christmas with Zero. A quintet of busts have been topped with singing jack-o'-lanterns while the graveyard ghosts sing about their perfect Christmas. Ghosts ride around on bicycles with Jack's bone deer. Giant ice angels with jack-o'-lantern heads blow on their horns overhead. Those were actually supposed to have CO2 coming out of them.
Really?
Yeah, the trumpets were supposed to be blasting like CO2 so that it looked like ice particles coming out of them. Guests finally enter the crypt as the vampire teddy bear plays his own little horn to say goodbye. In 2001 and 2002, Lock, Shock, and Barrel replaced the Hitchhiking Ghosts. In 2003, they were replaced by Oogie Boogie with the roulette wheel with various gifts. Guests are then shown what gifts they got in the mirrors mimicking the hitchhiking ghosts. Little Leota is replaced with Sally, looking at Jack flying away in his sleigh as the guests exit back out into New Orleans Square.
Which is cool. I love that little effect.
The ghost hosts warn guests about followers as Lock, Shock, and Barrel playfully peek out of their presence. Gilded mirrors surround the next walls, and in those mirrors, Lock, Shock, and Barrel sit in your car. Sally can be seen waving to Jack as she leaves, crossing the face of the moon, and wishing her a Merry Christmas. Guests then disembark their dune buggy, hearing the ghost play a jazzy tune to give them something to remember after they leave. Sounds like an STD. So, here, are you ready for some frightfully fun facts about the Haunted Mansion holiday?
Hit me.
All right, so every year a new ghoulish concept for the Haunted Mansion holiday gingerbread house is created for the celebration scene in the mansion's ballroom. This strange and wonderful treat is almost always a supernatural something or other. More than 400 flickering candles create a ghostly glow on the facade of the Haunted Mansion. Each night, more than 100 jack-o'-lanterns shine their light. Jack Skellington and his ghost dog Zero appear in a fully animated sequence on the ceiling of the stretching room, which transport guests into the depths of the mansion. The graveyard inside Haunted Mansion Holiday is covered with nearly 7,500 square feet of snow. More than 20 gallons of UV paint is used to enhance the snow's eerie glow, and nearly 1,000 tiny orange lights decorate the tree. And if one goes out, then the whole thing is just shot.
Exactly. I'm going straight to City Hall to complain. That's how I roll.
Each season, thousands of feet of black gnarly garland is draped and hung inside and outside the mansion holiday. Jack's dog Zero gathered more than 200 bones to use as decor, garland, and presents. More than 24 additional animated figures materialize inside the mansion whenever Jack brings the Haunted Mansion holiday around, from man-eating wreaths, which they love to put on t-shirts and ornaments, to vampire teddy bears that wait all year to join in the holiday spirit. Creepy cobwebs are artistically kept year-round to make Jack Skellington and the 99 Happy Haunts feel right at home. The haunting scent of tasty gingerbread wafts throughout the Grand Hall, tempting Happy Haunts and guests alike. And that is a actual gingerbread house that is crafted every year from hand and is actually baked. It's an actual gingerbread house. They actually make... quite a big deal about, they post videos and stuff on it.
Cool.
And as I mentioned, Kim Irvine, who's the daughter of the original Leota Tombs, is the when it's Haunted Mansion Holiday, is she's the floating Madame Leota head. So we talked about it a little bit. David, what do you think about Haunted Mansion Holiday and all that good stuff?
I like it. I like the whole thing. I think it stays on way too long. but my opinion is, like, on December 26th, all of that stuff should be gone.
I would be happy if it came, you know, if it opened December 1st. Yes. I mean, I get that it needs to, they need time to do the changeover. I really wish that it would open December 1st, and then, you know, I'll give it till the new year. The January 2nd, it's gone. But, you know, I feel bad for the guests who come to Disneyland and not only don't get to experience the original, and if you, but, you know, it's not only when it's open, but also when it's closed as well. Yeah. So,
my one critique about it, brought up when you talked about the UV paint, is I think the graveyard scene is too bright. It kind of takes away some of the spookiness.
It does a little bit. And the attic scene is a little bright, too. You can see some of the roll-up maintenance doors when you go by on your left-hand side. So, but other than that, I think it's a successful. And, you know, I'm really excited every year. I haven't ridden in a couple of years, and I think some of these things that I'm talking about today I actually haven't seen, like the fully animated Jack. And I really need to go and ride it again. That line is always so damn long. But all right. Well,
it's because there's a guy in there doing a puppet show. That's why.
You can connect with Vacationland online by visiting our website, vacationlandpodcast.com, our Facebook page, facebook.com/vacationlandpodcast, our Instagram at VLPodcast, our Twitter at VacationlandShow, and of course, you can always email us at vacationlandpodcast@gmail.com. And as always, if you're listening to us on iTunes or watching on YouTube, make sure to subscribe, rate, and comment. Now, I promised everybody a special announcement after this episode was done. And so, David, would you like to talk about what we've got planned?
Yeah, this is what did you call this?
Wait, are you familiar with the concept of a backdoor pilot?
I knew a guy in Vegas. Well, never mind. That's a different story.
That's a half hour.
The judge said I'm not supposed to talk about it. But anyway, what was the question?
So, if you're familiar, so a backdoor pilot in television is it's a very special episode of an existing show, and so this being a very special episode of an existing show, we are planning on using this as a jumping off point for a new show that's going to be debuting sometime in 2019. We don't have a name for it quite yet, but it's going to be a podcast, or it's going to be me and David and maybe a few other special guests.
Yeah.
And we're going to be specifically talking about Disneyland. Our main podcast show talks about all of the Southern California theme parks, but me and David are going to be talking about the history of Disneyland specifically. So we may go to the Disneyland Hotel. We may go to California Adventure, but it's going to be a once monthly show. And we're going to pick one specific topic to talk about, and we're going to go in depth on that subject once a month. And hopefully you have enjoyed this podcast, and you will enjoy that podcast once we have a name for it. And once we have the very first episode fully fleshed out, we will make an announcement. But for right now, the first five episodes are going to all have to do with the planning and lead up to the opening of the original Disneyland park. And so we both have topics about Disneyland history that we are very passionate about. David has an entire class devoted to the history of Disneyland. And I think it can be a really entertaining and informative show for people to listen to. So, so that's the big announcement. And when that show comes to life in 2019, we will make sure that everyone knows. And it's going to be right here as part of the Vacationland Theme Park Podcast Network of shows. So for right now, I'd like to thank you all for listening. I hope you have a happy holiday. We will be back in 2 weeks with our regular show. I'd like to thank David for joining us. And I hope you have enjoyed the show. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your stay in Vacationland.